guess you scared me. Isn't that silly?
Testing, hello, testing, 1, 2, 3, testing, hello and welcome to the Printing Press Lost Book Club. This is podcast number 006. On today's episode you will be introduced to the band Pinback and their song titles and connections to the show Lost. Also we will reveal the book for next month and boy oh boy is it a doozy, and how far did you get into Desmond's month and the book The Third Policeman. Pretty freaky if you ask me. Well, without any further ado, your educator's in the hatch and reading between the lines so you can really understand what is going on this island, Beakwain and Karen.
All right, thank you, Mr. Narrator, for helping us out there in the beginning. We have computers down here now, so Karen,
it's about five.
Yeah.
I'm telling you,
we're having fun. We didn't know that these things were used for, like, we play solitaire on there, chess.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
We're using it. We're getting what we need out of it. But that is our narrator. We have a computer down here, and he's going to help us out. And I thank him for it. It's not something we wanted to do, but...
But I heard computers can help simplify your life, and I heard that they're very helpful in everyday tasks. So I guess we'll find that out.
We will. So hopefully... We don't have a name for this guy, but he's our narrator for now, and we thank him. And before that, before he came on and turned off our music, thank you, that was Pinback. Pinback is going to be our band of the week, because you're going to notice some really bizarre. I mean, we're talking 5-6 years before Lost. They had an album, which was their self-titled, that had two tracks on there that are very Lost, and then that song you just heard was Penelope, which was off their tour EP. The tour EP came out before the second album, which you would find the original version of Penelope, the studio version. But this was something they did in their garage, and
that
the song's called Penelope.
That wasn't their second tour of Finland or something?
Well, that one? Yeah, no. You know. So there, that's Penelope, and that one you can find on a tour EP. That goes for a lot on eBay. So thank you, Pinback. So yeah, we're in the middle of a book right now, which we should definitely get into soon. But I think everybody's been kind of excited. Everybody I've been talking to wants to know what October's book is, because I say it's basically what hatched, started, and made the phenomenon of Lost Book Clubs famous. And I think that was the season 3 opener with, we had...
Tale of Two Cities?
Yep. We got Juliet hanging out at home, and she's making her muffins?
Making her muffins.
Yeah. And she gets a little knock on the door while she's listening to Downtown, and a little older looking Kate knocks on her door. Maybe I shouldn't say that, and I'm going to start confusing people. Great. But a woman knocks on her door, and Ethan's working underneath the... It's Ethan, right? Ethan's underneath her house working on something.
He's so talented. He's a doctor, and he can work on plumbing.
Multitasking Ethan is hanging out. And what is that lady going to the house for? She's meeting up with a lot of the people in the barracks to have a book club. Juliet started a book club. What was the book they were reading?
That was actually one of my favorites by my absolute favorite author. That was Carrie by Stephen King.
Ba-dum-bumps. There you go. That will be our October book, everybody.
Perfect.
Juliet is getting a month, and so is Carrie. So...
let's call it Halloween month.
It's
so
Halloween, exactly.
A freaky story going on.
So yeah, you know we plan this in ahead, and trust me, we have November set up. We're looking good with having what we're going to do for December. So, but please, still keep the suggestions coming. We love it. We love it. So yeah, Juliet's got a month. Carrie's got a month, and Stephen King can finally come in. So now we're on our third book, and this one, I feel is a necessity. Necessity.
Oh, I was so thrilled when we decided to go this route.
Yeah. A lot of people aren't. So let's, I'm not going to say a lot of people, because you tend to hear these more who are lost or not really enjoying it more than you will with the people who are enjoying it. And a lot of friends that I meet up who come over, they're excited about it. Like my friend Sean, very excited about this one. My friend Chris, excited about it. And this is The Third Policeman, which I think a lot of us really, it's got that 12 Monkeys feel. It's got that Brazil feel, very Terry Gilliam. It's got that Oh Brother Where Art Thou, I feel, with the Coen brothers, who have that new film that came out this weekend. It has this, some of my favorite directors and writers, and remember, this was written in the 30s or 40s, we don't know for sure, because Brian O'Nolan wrote it and then had to use the pseudonym Flann O'Brien. But yeah, he wrote this.
Do you know that he also uses the name Miles?
No, did he?
Yes, actually writes under the name Miles, but also has stories using the name Miles.
This guy is really intriguing, and I think it's so, not, just besides the story, it's also who he is, because seriously, this guy, the author, should be on our island. Wrote the book, he died, and then someone found the book, found the manuscript, finally got published in 67.
Right.
Yeah, so, hello. So let's go over where we are. Right now, we ended off really quick. Our narrator, not ours on this show. But we have a nameless subject who's telling our story. And basically, where we ended off right now is basically he's a dead man walking. He just found out that he's being convicted of this murder. And he, in 2 days, will be hung for this murder. So let's go all the way back to the beginning of the story.
Okay.
Beginning of the story. And there, the first page, he admits to the killing of a man, if you will. So let's go ahead. Give us our insight.
Okay, here we go. There's such important things that take place in the written story of the Third Policeman that literally are elements that directly pertain to Lost. Okay, and we're going to talk about later how, let's just put it out there. There
are
many people who just kind of took the subliminal visual of when the Third Policeman was shown in the episode orientation, and then the blurb was put out there, basically a one-sentence statement about what the book was about. But we are, as you and I are reading, investigating, and taking our notes, I am so excited to see so much more in-depth layers of what's going on.
Yeah.
So here we go. Now we'll go into my insane lostness. Let's keep in mind that DeSelby here, he is not even a real author.
Not at all. Not a real philosopher.
He's imaginary, and his books and theories do not exist.
Not at all. No, you can't Wikipedia this guy. It is all
It's fake.
Yeah, okay. This is all in the brain of Brian O'Nolan, Flann O'Brien. This is all in his mind.
And it's actually the author of our narrator, the narrator of Third Policeman. He is fascinated with the work of this DeSelby here. And, this guy is a kind of philosopher, a little bit of science and things like that. But his thoughts are really outlandish. But anyway, it's important to know that we never learn the name of the main character, but he is our narrator. Our main character was orphaned.
Yep.
Okay? He was orphaned. He loved to read and learn. He was especially fond of the work of this person, DeSelby. An accident left the main character with a prosthetic left leg.
Yep.
John Dibney, he worked at the farm and the pub of the narrator's family. John's a bit of a con man, a liar, and a thief. The narrator wants to get some of his own work published, and John involves him in robbing the rich man, Philip Mathers, so he can have money to publish the works. And this doesn't end up so well, as Mathers ends up killed. Dibney, he knocks Mathers down with the bicycle pump, and the narrator finishes him off with a spade. Mm-hmm. Dibney takes off with Mathers' cash box. When Dibney returns, he refuses to reveal where the cash box is, but much later it's revealed that the cash box is hidden in Mathers' house.
3 years these two spent together. He would not leave by his side. I mean, he spent 3 years with him by his
literally
side.
Glued to him, literally not wanting him out of his sight.
I forgot the line where they explain sleeping together, and and use the word queer and use the word queer in it that I thought was just brilliant, brilliant, really funny, very funny. I just thought it was very funny. So
it's, I mean, it's really great when you leading and you're feeling how he just doesn't. He literally has to keep his eye on John at all times.
Yes.
The narrator finally finds out that it's in Mather's house, and he basically has permission to go and retrieve this cash box. When he's in Mather's house, he actually sees Mather's, who, mind you, is passed on.
Dead.
He's sitting. 3 years sitting dead. In a chair. That's it.
Yeah.
The narrator notes interesting things about Mather's eyes.
Yep.
He actually feels like they're like eyes, but they're not really seeing eyes. The real eyes are like behind the pinholes of the eyes. You know when you go to the Haunted Mansion at Disney and those eyes follow you, but they're really not the eyes?
So
that's
creepy.
What I pictured in my mind.
Right, me too.
Yep.
Totally.
The narrator notes those important things about the eyes, but he also has an interesting chat with Mathers. But the narrator is confused by what he's experiencing. He knows he's there to get the cash box. The environment of the dark room feels very eerie and weird to him. He's having a conversation with what he knows is a dead man, yet the conversation is always spoken on Mather's behalf in the negative. So things are very confusing to the narrator. He's there to get the cash box, but then we find that the cash box kind of disappears. It's not there. Mathers tells him a story of the three policemen at the barracks. They can tell him where the cash box is. The narrator travels to these barracks. On his way, he meets a thief with a wooden leg.
There's two of them. There's him and him, you know, so there's another two.
This guy offers him a golden token for a golden journey, but it wasn't golden at all. It was really a bright penny.
Right.
Some other important facts, I'll run through them pretty quickly or as smoothly as I can, but it's important to listen to the words that I use as they will tie in really pretty much, Brian, to the blogs you and I write and
exactly.
what we pick out, okay? There is talk of atoms. I want you to know that, of course, you know, we have these little scientific talks about Lost. There's talks about transformations occurring. They also use examples of being half human, half bicycle. I'll explain. There's something to be said for the more you sit on a bicycle or the more you are actually, you're actually becoming part of it. You actually meld together. You transform into this one unit. So it's becoming, you're a person and a bicycle, but yet the more time you sit on this bicycle, now you're becoming half human ass bicycle, you're going to transform into something new.
What was that that they called it? Was that the atomic theory or no? I can't remember.
I'm going to misquote. I didn't write the exact quote down.
Yeah, neither did I.
It's important to note that the sergeant, one of the three policemen, is a good detective because he planted the clues to find the bicycle that he stole in the first place. Obviously, if you've read up to the point of about page 115, you find that at some point they're out searching for just another person who lives in the parish's bicycle.
Yes.
The three policemen speak in riddles and or puzzles, in a sense.
Always.
There's no sense of actual logical dialogue.
No.
It's also important to know that we have the three policemen, Sergeant Pluck. How do you say this man's name? McCruskin?
That's what I was saying. Yeah.
And then a fox, who Fox has never seen, but apparently shows up every night to sign this book all the time. We learn that there are four winds, each with eight subwinds, and each with their own colors. People's colors, I guess it's like an aura or something that they
that's
see
what, yeah.
the color.
Well, I think that's what I got out of that.
Their colors are determined by their birth. So the lighter your color, the longer you live. It's also important to note here that one of the policemen is very crafty and creative, and he creates these little beautiful golden boxes. But these boxes start out at one size, and then you find that once you open the lid, there's another box inside. They're an exact replica, and then you open that one, there's another exact replica, smaller and smaller and smaller.
Yeah,
and it's very, very important to note that these are exact replicas in every sense of the word, except smaller. So they are all fitted within each other. We also find that there is two other phantom authors, I'll use the word phantom, Hatch, Jaw, and Bassett. Those are other authors within the story who also write about the works of DeSelby. We discover in the story that there is an issue with time, not time travel. There is an issue with time.
Right.
In the sense that what the policeman says to him, it's not yesterday, it's not today, it's yesterday, and okay, but it's not time travel, but there is an issue with time.
Right, he keeps riddling okay? with him on that, right.
That's important. The narrator, once he finally decides he's going to hiccup at the three policemen at the barracks, he lies. He's going to con them, and he's going to try to find out how to find this cash box, but he lies saying that he has an American gold watch with 15 jewels, and that's the kind of lie he's created to get these policemen to help him find the cash box. Mind you, the narrator cannot remember anything else about himself. He cannot remember his name, his life, or anything else other than he's there to get the cash box and that he's made up this, you know, he's going to con them. He's going to use this lie about this American gold watch, but he cannot remember anything else. One thing
really quick that we didn't tackle about DeSelby, I really want people to know, it was season four. Every season of Lost, even in, you know, Glass, Mirrors, stuff like that. In this book, we are given the comparison of Lost to Mirrors, if you will. DeSelby had that idea that a mirror never really shows your true self. It's not an image. It's not you. Right. It's just, how do you explain this?
Right, he theorizes, this make-believe author, who's kind of a bit outlandish in his thought process, theorizes that nature of time and eternity, it's really done by a system of mirrors. Does that mean it's a trick? It's a trick, okay?
Trickery.
To say, he does have some very interesting theories, again, as outlandish as they are. He feels that human existence is a hallucination. You know, there also that life is an illusion and motion is an illusion with repetitions that are occurring just really in between rests. He also discusses the illusion of travel, and that's, you know, where we find out things about the mirrors and things.
Right.
And they're really pretty bizarre.
It is a bizarre book, I'll tell you. It's so interesting, but it really, if you could really follow it, and I think people should. Because you have to separate. You do, and I do too. You have to separate yourself from this world. I mean, we're hearing people need dictionaries. We're hearing people. You don't really. You just need to follow their.
This is a book that you should sit in a quiet area and actually let your imagination
go. Just go with it. It's not going to be our John Steinbeck's. It's not going to be even, you know, Stephen King is outlandish as he can get sometimes.
But this story is more dreamlike.
Right, it is extremely, so go with it. And I think that's what's so phenomenal about it. I've helped myself to, I guess better off myself with following these characters. Mathers, I made him Jacob. The narrator, I kind of made Daniel Faraday. And I know this is going to go over people's heads because the film is just my favorite film of all time. But Joe, the man inside the narrator's head, which we have not tackled yet, but the narrator of this story has somebody giving him input as well, it reminds me of Ricky Jay, who did the narration of the film Magnolia. So I have that, where he's telling him some kind of outlandish, like, instances that have happened. This could be your name. That should be a name. This is a name. This is,
right.
You know. And it reminds me of, like, Ricky Jay's narration in the beginning of Magnolia and the end of Magnolia, P.T. Anderson's Magnolia. So that could help you. I honestly think people should try doing that.
I see this DeSelby guy more as Faraday.
That's true, too. There you go. Really.
Meaning he's got these outlandish scientific theories and things, yet can they really be put into fruition? They're so bizarre.
They're
so
bizarre, but they're so good at the same
time.
But
the whole book,
good.
Like I said, is more dreamlike. It's more when, you know, when in real life, when you dream and things are just so out of context, almost just people talk bizarre in a dream, or
right.
Things are out of size is disoriented, or perception, which is the big thing about when our narrator first approaches the barracks. He notes that the building of the barracks where he's approaching, its dimension
is
askew.
Painted.
It's not three-dimensional. It's more two-dimensional, as if he's looking at a poster. So, it's very dreamlike. The dimensions are messed up. The perception of how he's visually seeing things, hearing the dialogue being spoken in such bizarre ways in puzzles or, you know, it's just so dreamlike.
It's awesome. It really is. So.
I love it. I love it. Yeah. I love it.
So we did not play our second song. We totally just, we're on our 25th minute. So we do have to end it soon. So I don't know where I'm going to put that song. So I'm going to put it here. I'm going to put it right here. Sorry we have to do two songs so close to each other. But really quick, here's Pinback's Hurley. The song is called Hurley. And it's the second track off the first album, 1999. And yeah, we're going to hit you with the second song, or the third song, which is the second song off that album, again, 99, with another character on Lost. So enjoy. This one's called Hurley. That is Pinback, trust me. My friend Sean, we love these guys. Love these guys. Well, I'm more of a first album, second album. But everybody says they could do no wrong. But I swear, this band is just beautiful. Beautiful music. And just, I guess at the time when I used to write and really just go on tour with bands, this was what I was doing, was just listening to Pinback when it first came out. I remember the first time I heard him on tour and I was like, wow, I just wrote all day long. So that's Hurley. Really quick, let's end up on the Third Policeman. Let's do that really quick.
Well, I cannot wait to go on and discuss the next part of the book because it's just unbelievable the amount of connection that has to our Lost story.
It's incredible.
But what we have to really think about is what's really, really going on here. And I'll tell you this much, the essence, the truth of what really is going on is right there in front of us.
Yeah.
We're going to find that the Third Policeman is the epitome of us thinking that the story is about one thing, but we're going to find out that it's about something completely different once we get to the punchline. The truth is deep down in the core. It's right there in front of your eyes.
It is. And that, we will be with you guys on September 30th. It is our last day of September. So we are landing on the last day of September. So that is when our next podcast will launch. So thank you again for listening on that, for this one. And remember, we will have another one September 30th. We're no holds barred on this one. I swear, I will go the extra 5 minutes on a 35-minute podcast to give it all. I'm ready to explain really your views, my views on how sometimes they go over people's heads, but it's right there. Even our narrator knows we're crazy. He says that read between the lines. We do. We dissect so much with this show. Is it disgusting? Yeah, I could do it. No, you know. But I swear, it's so good. You know what else is so good, Karen? Which we need 1 minute. 2 minutes? 2 minutes. Hell, we could do a whole nother podcast. Fringe. Holy shit.
I know. I friggin' went crazy. You don't even want to.
We didn't even talk about this yet. You like how I just threw that out there? I put Fringe on my notes. Like,
friggin' no.
Wow. Holy Let's just shit. Want to talk about, again, Magnolia. People, rent the beginning of Magnolia. You don't have to see the whole thing. If you hate it, whatever. Just know that those coincidences that happen in this world really do happen. And when they really do happen, there are people there to solve it. And I swear, the acting is so poops McGee, but I don't give a shit. Because this show, what? I was like, please, if you're going to do what I think you guys are going to do, please do it and make it real. Because I liked the whole incident on the plane. I loved it. But if they're going to start grabbing these real instances that have happened, some really messed up situations that people cannot explain, please do. And I really hope they're real events. I really would love to have real events. So did you liked it? You liked it.
I liked it. Brian, I'm telling you, we could just go and talk about that show and
it was a great pilot. Yeah. It was a great pilot. I love the numbers feel.
Do you not see like any like similarities though to Lost?
Oh shit! How many times did they say 108 on the show? There's so much shit about
you know, children being missing for years and they don't age, and you know, here she is. He's manipulating her brain, and she's going to go to sleep and
she's going to sleep and going into his coma.
To go, you know, and this black shadow's in her dream passes by her a couple of times. You know,
and another thing, that sleep deprivation thing, guys. Come on, I call shenanigans because it has to be pure dark in there. You have to be completely dark to really lose yourself and to get into that kind of state. But I'll tell you, it was unbelievable. I think this show has such good potential. I can't.
It does, because there was a few moments in it that actually had a giggle here and there, because it had a little bit of everything, you know.
It does. It made me feel like it had that show numbers.
Reality anyway, you right. know, come on. This is the kind of stuff that we like anyway.
It is. So it completely. I really hope it's gonna. I hope it goes off with a bang. I didn't watch the previews to this season, but please, I hope they have fun with it, and I hope they do it right, because. Sure, it could be something like the X-Files, but I think they're going to, again, everything that they do is a little bit smarter, so I like it.
It's just interesting to find that Fringe ends with a TV commercial ad for their...
There you go.
Which is very Hanso, darn.
It keeps you going even after the show is, off, like, not off the air, but off, you know, for the week.
Yeah.
You're going to go on Massive Dynamic and play with their website, so... Good. I'm glad you're watching. Everybody, please, you should watch, because when you hear this, it's too late. On Sunday, there was a replay. So if not, try to find it on Fox.com. Try to watch the series premiere of Fringe. Remember, it is JJ. He has his hands in it. And hell, there's a lot of people.
Yes, but I miss Lost. I want Lost to come back on.
Let's get that back on, please.
I need it.
Yeah, badly. So, all right, we are about the 30-minute mark. I want to say thank you again, Karen.
Thank you, Brian.
And I'm going to leave it to our narrator to let you know everything and anything that we could do please, we are on the internet. We are around, so we'll let the narrator...
Yeah, leave us comments. Leave us questions.
Please, we love it. And we'll read.
We want you to be involved.
We're going to read on the next one. Usually the second podcast of the book, we do read your comments and your suggestions and your views on what we do. So, again, we're going to end you off with Pinback. This song is called Russo. And, okay, no spoilers. I'm not going to say a word. But it's Russo. So the song is called Russo. Again, on the first album, 1999. It's towards the end of the album, but it's a great song. Here is our narrator. So let him say goodbye. Namaste, everybody.
Namaste.
And we'll talk to you soon. All right, everybody. Bye.
Thank you for downloading and listening to the podcast. But did you know the printing press is also on Facebook and MySpace? Big Wayne and Karen will be updating all the time, so check us out. And you can find us on iTunes by searching Lost Book Club. Also, shoot me an email at thelostbookclub@yahoo.com or at MySpace. On behalf of the Dharma Initiative and all of us at the printing press, namaste.
Statement of posterity. Thank you. not belong on this